Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
If you're interested in Tesla, don't miss Ride the Lightning, the Tesla unofficial podcast hosted every week by me, Ryan McCaffrey, a longtime Tesla owner and super fan. On episode 200, I had Elon Musk on for an hour. On episode 220, I talked to Tesla's chief designer, and I'm also there at every big Tesla event covering it in person. Ride the Lightning recaps and analyzes everything happening with the world's biggest EV automaker each week. Hear about the latest Cybertruck developments, the next-gen Roadster, the Model S Plaid, plus the newest updates to the Model 3, X, Y, and more. New episodes have been dropping every Sunday since 2015, so jump in and enjoy. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast service, or check it out at patreon.com/Tesla Podcast. That's Ride the Lightning, the Tesla unofficial podcast.
JB Weld, today's podcast brought to you by JB Weld, world's strongest bond. The brand DIYers and pros have trusted for over 50 years. You got to keep it in your cupboard, your toolbox, your garage. Available at jbweld.com, Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart, wherever you find finer products. Proudly made in the U.S. of A. Well, in this episode, we talk to legendary announcer and driver and friend of the show, Justin Bell. We'll also get into Cadillac and talk a little rally racing, a lot of Le Mans, some Trans Am news as well. First, there's Geico. Would you love to save some money on your insurance? Of course you would. And who doesn't love a deal? When it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, Geico can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even your homeowners, condo, or renter's insurance. They are all covered with Geico. Save even more with special discounts when you bundle coverages together. Plus, they have an easy-to-use Geico mobile app and 24/7 roadside assistance, so it's easy to switch to Geico. It's a no-brainer. Switch today and see just how much you could save at geico.com. Go there and get a rate quote, or contact a local agent. Yeah, get it on. Got to get on a choice, but got a mandate. Get it on. Welcome to CarCast. I'm Adam Carolla. It's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, over there.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. We've got a big lineup of some fun cars to be driving over the next month or so, and you know, kicked it off with this Cadillac CT4 V Series Blackwing. It's a big name.
I know. I can't. You know, black. It's funny. There's like black label whiskey and black. The Mercedes has the black version of things.
Remember
You know, and it. You know,
Lincoln is a black label.
Yeah, that's why I was confused. Like when I was trying to get my Lincoln, I was like, Lincoln black label, not in black, just the black.
Yeah.
And then isn't black label, I kept thinking, isn't that Scotch? But it's interesting in that I always look at the decade and I go, what is the buzzword of that decade, you know? Like in the 90s it was stealth. It was it'd be stealth cars and stealth aftershave, and stealth movies. Like we just
stealth aftershave. Is that just water?
We like the idea of stealth. Yeah. You know, it was hot. And then right before stealth, there was turbo.
Yep.
Everything was turbo. And then cars be turbo, big letters, you know, turbo, you know.
Like shavers were turbo.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The Gillette turbo. I was like,
cologne, aftershave. Uh-huh. Cars, deodorant, you know, it's just like turbo. And then there's a lot of like turbocharge your day with this cereal, you know. So now we're into black.
Yeah.
That's we pick words and we go, oh yeah. And then we go with those words.
Right.
And, you know, before turbo, it was all rocket, jet.
And green, right? Because when we're starting to dabble with fuel efficiency and getting into EV and hybrids, it was green. Mm-hmm. But now we're just saying EV and we're saying hybrid. Green's not even coming up anymore.
Right.
Right, you know?
Right. So I just like when we grab a buzzword, and it's not one company. You know, Lincoln, Mercedes, Cadillac, you know, yeah, I mean, Lincoln and Cadillac, but they're all, it's all black.
Yeah. Well, this car is badass.
Really?
I don't care what it's called. So the CT4, so the lineup is, and I was trying to get this in an order of sort of kind of a fun scale and practical scale. So I've got the CT4 Blackwing, and then I'm going to drive the new Corvette, and then the new Cadillac Escalade, because it's got some road trips, and Grand Prix of Long Beach, and then the CT5 Blackwing, which is the slightly bigger version. So the CT4 is kind of the 3-series-ish, mm-hmm. you know, and then the CT5 is the larger kind of 5-series-ish. And, you know, we... We've talked about sort of the last hurrah of good gas engine vehicles, something fun you can get before you start getting into all EV stuff. And not that those cars won't perform. The performance numbers are there. But the CT4, it's a 3.6 liter turbocharged V6. I want to say it's four. Let me get the exact spec. 472 horsepower, 445 pound-feet of torque. Manual transmission.
Mm.
And I know the automatic, the 10 speed's probably a tenth or two quicker, but the manual transmission just makes it
fun. The way
fun.
You drive, double clutch, granny,
granny shift.
But, you know, if you had Vin Diesel behind the wheel, you'd probably shave a few tenths.
Yes, for sure. It is the game changer. It's kind of like the CTS-V when it had the manual, and the V-Wagon when it had the manual. Like, and those are starting to pull some money on bring a trailer.
Oh, my God. You know, I'll see wagons, like Cadillac wagons, sometimes even Mercedes. I always think about Mike August because he's dying to get a wagon. he's never going to get a wagon, but he's always thinking about it, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you go to Europe with Mike and – you know, you go to Goodwood, he's always walking through the parking lot. Look at that wagon. Look at that wagon. Because in Europe, they have all these cool wagons,
right.
You know. But
if he finds like a salvage title, something or other, he might pull the trigger on it. But it has to be something very unconventional how he acquires it.
Well, like, you know, when you see those caddy wagons pop up on Bring a Trailer for 70 grand or something. I don't know. You know, I mean, you know, I'm trying to even think what years they are, but they're getting all the money.
Yeah, they are. You know, years ago when I did that Spectre 341 challenge.
And then there's the Magnum.
Yes, the Magnum, which I don't think ever had a manual. Amir Rosenbaum, who had Spectre at the time, he put on that event, he got a CTS-V wagon. And he just like stripped all the interior out just to do the hill climb. It was like one seat and him. And that thing was fast. I mean, it was quick. You take all that weight out of it.
Yeah.
And it was just sheet metal in that thing. But, you know, this car scoots around good. It's probably 0-60 in about 4 seconds. Starts at just under 60 grand. The one I'm driving is 70. I think you can get it even up closer to 90, but 70 seems pretty well equipped. Massage seats, heated and cooled. You know, they've all got the magnetic ride now, so it's a really good balance. Like, you get into this thing, and it's super comfortable to drive, smooth, good feedback with the steering.
Everything is good. Everything
and then it hauls ass.
Everything's fast.
You know,
I mean, everyone has an offering now. You know, it used to be... there was a time back in, you know, 2000, 1999, and a guy like Dr. Drew won a little performance. It's, you know, he got the BMW M5.
M5, yeah.
And then I had the M3, you know. But, and it was like perfect. He had kids. I didn't, you know, he got the 4-door, I got the 2-door. But those were kind of the offerings back then. Mm-hmm. There was a couple of other cars that had some performance, but... You wanted a sedan that had some real performance. He got his in a stick, by the way. But he got an M5.
Yeah.
And that was kind of about it. Jaguar and Cadillac and
there was probably like a
Mercedes.
Like a Mercedes AMG.
There was some stuff out there, but it was pretty limited. It's not like, you know, Acura and
Audi maybe Lexus. Had like an S4, but maybe not an RS4 then.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what Audi had. Well, regardless, it's now on. Everyone's got something.
Right, because, you know, again, we talk about we wanting this stuff that once you threaten to take it away from us, we kind of really want it, you know. And although we've got no problem with EV stuff, yeah, this is just a cool car. And, I've got it – everything's programmable now, so I've got it to where the exhaust is configured to be a little loud all the time because I like the noise, and I got the gauges programmed to be sort of the Sport Plus kind of gauge, the V gauges, and so, you know, they're kind of the configuration has it's a little bit more racy in the front, tells you what gear you're in and the RPM, and it's got all the performance meters on it. But one of the meters that is on there is actually kind of like is up in the upper right of the left corner. You can leave the tire pressure gauge up there. You don't have to it doesn't have to wipe out the whole screen. It just shows you a little bit. It fits it in there. And underneath it. It tells you cool, normal, or hot. So it tells you your tire temps as well. So when you get in it, it just says cool. It doesn't tell you the actual temperature. And then after you drive it, it'll switch. It'll just say normal.
What a time.
It's just kind of a neat thing. Or like, oh, we're doing tire temperature now as well. I mean, maybe it's doing it based off of, I don't know, driving time or something. But it's got to be something in the sensor that's doing the tire pressure. It's got to be doing the temperature sensor as well, but I don't know, it's just kind of neat to know when your tires are warm.
The tire pressure is a good the gauge, the meters or whatever. It's good. It's a good and a bad thing. You know, Joe Coy pulled up in his Ferrari.
I saw the pictures of that.
I can't remember.
Good for him.
It's the new one. Good for him. One of the new ones.
The Portofino? Is it the convertible hardtop?
Yeah. I thought it was a California for a second. I was like, oh, boy.
Well, this is the successor to that.
So. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I had to slow them. I bit my tongue for a second. Then I was like, oh.
Yeah.
You know, he came in. He was like, the tire pressure gauge. Do you have a tire pressure gauge? Do you have a hose? Comedians are the best. That's why I yell at my family every 10 seconds. I went down to the garage the other night. I put Sonny's bike back together, put the tires back on, filled them with the compressor. And I'm like, you don't get it. You don't get what other comedians do. They're completely worthless. They know nothing. He just got out of the car. He's like, but the light's on the dash.
Yeah.
So we went over to the other shop and got the gauge and I think Gary threw it on there, and it was all within a pound and a half of one another, you know, all four corners. And it's like that gauge pops on a lot. It freaks people out. And sometimes it means something, and a lot of times it doesn't mean anything. It's just on.
So the light comes on and it tells you if you're low on pressure, but there's often something in the, you know, in the configuration where you can see what the pressure numbers are. Right?
Well, so I think the problem is, and maybe it's all our fault, but when Joe Coy sees he's got 37 pounds on the driver's side front, that doesn't mean anything to him.
Right. But what if, I mean, look, he's a smart guy. What if he saw the four corners and it said 38, 38, 38, 28?
Yeah, that'll mean something. No, that'll mean something. We need a baseline, though. We need, here's what you want to be.
Yeah. Right. Like maybe some of the configuration should be, you know, sort of like a grayed out numbers, like the range is, you know, 34 to 40, depending on the temperature. And, you know, if you're in that range, it would, you know, it would show or different color. Right. If it said, you know, if it's a yellow was all the numbers, but if it dropped below, the number would turn red. So it didn't really matter what the number was. He would see 30 and it would be a red number. He'd be like, oh, red probably means bad.
Justin Bell's going to join us in a second. He's here now, so we'll bring him in. Of course, his dad won Le Mans. Oh, nothing. Five times. Raced with his father in 92 and 95. What years did I do Le Mans with my dad? Was it? I was 93, 94. Yeah. I think I missed him. Being Pops Corolla racing Le Mans. If I told my dad I was leaving for France to race Le Mans, I'd go like, yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
And then he wouldn't remember when you got back. What have you been doing?
Here's how much my dad knows about me racing. He read in the newspaper that NASCAR is like coming to Fontana. And he's like, you in that race?
Yeah.
And I was like,
sure. Just say
yeah,
yes.
Dad, I'm on the circuit. That, yeah.
Wait, I thought you were banned from the circuit from that incident.
Well, I killed that guy on the track after you died in the car. But yeah, we're going. Yeah, then we got to leave for Talladega tonight. I mean, after the race.
Yeah. It's
right after the weekend. We got to pack up the semi. Yeah, I'm on the circuit. Dad, there's something called professional race car driving. Yeah. I do a podcast. I'm a comedian who sometimes does a race. So I know if I'm somebody, involved with that.
If somebody, you know, came over, if a cable guy came over, let's assume he had cable. If a cable mm-hmm. guy came over mm-hmm. and he said, oh, that's a picture of your son? And he said, yeah, what does he do? What do you think he would say? Race car driver? Comedian?
He'd podcaster? Say he does a podcast or something. Justin Bell is here. We were just comparing and contrasting your father and my father as it pertains to automobile racing.
Well, hello, guys.
Hey, how are you?
You're good. Do you know, it's funny. I kind of heard that, and I didn't know he was who he was until I got beaten up at school. You know what I mean? Because isn't everyone's dad a race car driver? You know, you just grow up and...
We're here to tell you now.
No. Well, do you know what? It shows how you can have your head stuck in your ass because growing up, I literally was a kid at my little prep school who said, are you Dirt Bell's son? And next thing is I was lying on my back.
Really?
Yeah, because kids, especially British kids, you know, we love to build people up and then take them down. That's the British thing, right? It's what we do instantly. Nigel Mansell, oh my God, he was just the best. And then the Daily Mail slaughtered him for the next 10 years. And
right.
It's kind of a British thing. But I remember talking to Chloe Mason, you know, Nick's daughter, and I had a – I'm sure she won't like this being said on air, but we had a little thing back in the day when mm-hmm. we were teenagers shortly.
Pink Floyd, Nick Mason.
And she'd never been to anything other than Wembley, you know, to mm-hmm. watch – in front of 50,000 people. She'd never been to a pub and watched her dad play a gig. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I guess the moral of the story is that if you're born in, you know, to someone, you only know your dad when he's successful. If he becomes successful, you didn't know the journey up there, you know? So
did you, go to Le Mans? I mean, I know you raced with your dad at Le Mans. Did you go there as a fan and watch him?
The first time I went, I was 4 months, so I don't remember that, but I've been to Le Mans about 38 times out of 54 years. Yeah, I raced there 12 times, won it and all that stuff once. But then I went to see but there was a period in my late teens when I kind of went with friends as a fan. And it was mm-hmm. it was a whole different world. Oh, my God, people getting drunk over here. You know, all the places my mum had tried to stop me being exposed to because they used to in the good old days have a fair. And a good old fairground with mm-hmm. prostitutes and the world's fattest lady and, you know, a three-legged small person.
You see the old Le Mans footage and you can see the Ferris wheel in the background.
It was like Mad Max over there. And my mom would take us for a walk and my sister and I, you know, would be 12 going, let's go in there. I want to see the fattest lady in the world again. And she'd be like, we're not doing that. Meanwhile, then they cleaned the whole place up by the time I was unfortunately older.
They tried to do it to the ring. Right, they try to do it at the Nürburgring with fair and a whole thing, and it's just a ghost town, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you take the sleaze out of the sleazy area, it suddenly takes a lot out of it, doesn't it? You know, it's like reduces the appeal. Sebring, I mean, Sebring still, you know, in the good old days, they'd burn cars in the middle. You know, now they have a police station with like a 60-foot crow's nest above everybody. But everyone's still doing everything they want to, just out of sight. I mean, it's a fun thing.
What were you driving when you won?
The Viper.
Oh, the Viper. Yeah. That's
so right. So 1995 was in the Harrods McLaren with Dad. You know, we led for 12 hours on Father's Day.
Really?
And then came third behind the J.J. Leto car. And that was obviously extraordinary to be up there on the podium with my dad. And I mean, you'd have appreciate this, Adam, because, you know, obviously it happens to you when you go to Starbucks, but I've never had 100,000 people on the podium. We stood up there and 100,000 people down below and 70,000 Brits all shouting. I mean, I heard Bell. I mean, they were saying Derek Bell, but, you know, it was like Bell. And I'm like,
it's close enough.
and it's close enough. And dad said, just, you know, soak it in. So I went to the front, put my hands on the railing and remember going, God, to be a dictator. Now I get it. Now I know there's an appeal to this sort of massive humanity. And then when I went back 3 years later when we won it in the Viper, which was just, you know, kick-ass program, really. And we won everything for 4 years. And being up there, having won your class, was great, but not as good as finishing third with Dad.
Was the first time you did Le Mans with your dad? Was that the first time?
1992. Yeah. Was the first time I did in the 962 Porsche.
Okay.
Yeah, in the pouring rain. When I, you know, the difference between being young and stupid and old and stupid, maybe. Dad says it's raining, it's horrific out there. And I came in and went, that was brilliant. You know, so
so much fun.
So much fun. But yeah, that was the end of that 962 era. You know, it was like the last run probably for one of those cars. But
yeah, I was going to say into the early 90s. Yeah.
But pulling out of the pit lane at a race where I'd watched it as a fan for 25 years was still the single most defining moment. You know, pulling out, going, oh my God, here it is. Okay, there's the fairground. You could smell the, you know, I used to say, you could smell the sweet smells of the fairground at night when you drove past. You could smell the campfires on the back. You could smell the marijuana, you know, down into another part of the track through Tête Rouge, and then you'd get the bright lights of the pits. It's a very special place.
Yeah, a feast for the senses. I was there in, I'm going to say, see if I can try to figure this out. I was there in maybe 04.
What place did you come in?
05. Yeah. It was a torrential rainstorm. I think they shortened the race by an hour, and I think Aston Martin won the GT class. So it must have been 06 or something, something like that. That was my recollection. I love those Aston Martins in the British, I mean, in the they Aston Martin so Racing good. Green. They just, in the race trim, that's a proper GT car.
It is, isn't it? But I don't know about you, but when I'm driving around here, if I see a Vantage or a Vanquish, or you still go, that dude, he chose well. I mean, if I see one, I go, yeah, that was a definite decision to buy that car. It's not just like you're buying a you know, BMW or
right,
something.
Right.
You go, that is a really interesting choice.
Yeah. I just drove the Vantage, well, I don't think they call it a V8 Vantage anymore. It's just the Vantage, and then they have the 12 that's coming out that's already sold. And it had the face lifted front, right? The optional note for like $3,000, you can make it look like an Aston Martin again instead of the big grouper mouth. And I was like, oh, this really looks good.
Oh, yeah.
It really looks good.
Yeah. Did you go to the Peterson and see that when they did the Bond exhibition and see all the Astons there?
No, we should have done that.
Guys, that was pretty cool to see the cars that they had there. I mean, you realize why James Bond drives an Aston.
Yeah.
Especially that DB5 there.
Where is that? Yeah, is it a 4 or 5?
DB4, isn't it? The original.
I guess. Where is that Viper that won Le Mans, won the class at Le Mans?
So the first, I know that we won the World Championship the year before, which was the first championship for Chrysler. So I know that's in the Rensen, you know, it's in their museum in Detroit. I think some guy owns it. I drove it about 10 years ago at Goodwood, and some French guy owns it. And, you know, where there was a time, as we all know, when they're going, do you want to buy a race car? It's 50 grand. It's 25 grand. It's 100 grand. Now they're like, oh, it's 5 million.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
I would imagine that car being, the only Chrysler to win, or
the only Chrysler to win a world championship and the only Chrysler to win Le Mans.
That's what I was going to say. Now, the, you know, Chrysler doesn't have the provenance per se, but it, what everyone's always looking for. It's always funny when you look on Bring a Trailer or Bruce Canepa's website. Is it like only 47 of these four GTs were in Wimbledon white? And you're like, they're always trying to get some. Yeah, and this is a radio delete, so they only made 18 of those. Like, they're always kind of trying to whittle that number down to some sort of rarefied air. But yeah, the only Viper and. Vipers have come on strong lately. I mean, they used to be able to pick those things up for 30 grand all day long. And
not now.
People kind of knocked them. You know, they're going to have a fit and finish and blah, blah. It's got a truck engine in it, you know, all that shit. But they ain't cheap anymore.
No,
and
I mean,
I imagine whoever bought that Le Mans winning Viper is pretty happy with their decision now.
There was a Viper on Bring a Trailer, the first gen, one of the handful of like the very first ones that were kind of hand built. And I think it went up to like 80 or 83,000 on Bring a Trailer, and it was like no sale. And actually, the seller sounded like a little grumpy at the end. He's like, fine, I'll just
you know, did the touch-up paint. It'll be back. It's going to be worth way more. Yeah. It was like, all right, 83 grand.
Well, you know, they made the year we won, it was all in the middle of that Chrysler-Daimler-Chrysler merger and everything.
Right.
And I thought I was going to be racing for Mercedes the next year. So we had this celebration dinner in Detroit. And can you imagine this? The entire board of Chrysler and all these people in the middle of the atrium there at the Rennes Center. I was in the AC in the Le Mans car down the corridor. I mean, I was in the car we won the championship. It's like in November. And I had to drive down this corridor towards the crowd and like, da-da, get out. I started it up. Yeah. Freaking noise. I didn't realize that when you light up cold, race-worn slicks on vinyl flooring, the tires win. So I kind of gathered up like a cartoon all the vinyl tires, and I'm just wah, 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 and they're just trying to like making a silly noise for effect. Carbon brakes, of course, and I go to hit them, and I'm going. I'm doing 20 miles an hour, but I'm going. I can't freaking stop this car, and I've got like Bob Lutz and everyone there going, this is great.
This is great.
This like, I'm about to make the main news by killing the you know, taking out like pinballs the whole board.
What were the restrictions in your class for that car, engine wise, horsepower wise? Was it about an intake?
Well, you see, we were in what was called at one point GT1, so even GT1 and then GT2, and I mean, I think we were probably running on the north side of 750 horsepower in that. We were doing 215 miles an hour down the straight.
Wow.
Because it didn't have the downforce. Whereas, you know, it's funny with prototypes, you know, they go through the corner so much faster, and then something as slippery as the Viper just started to go by them again, you know,
right
down the straight.
And this isn't kind of an early Viper. So as the Viper went on.
Yeah. What they did, actually, Matt, was they, a bit like Porsche when they did the 959, you know what I mean? And then they had 20 years of 911s trying to catch up to the 959,
yeah,
right? Mm-hmm. It was so ahead of its time. Our race car was so advanced, full carbon fiber, everything. You know, the road, it had no correlation to the road cars. You know,
right,
you people say, oh, I hate a Viper. It's just a you know, meathead's car. I'm like, well, our race car isn't. You know, it's a full-blown Eureka prepared it.
And the production cars, the GTS models, all catching
all
up to be
up
what you drove 10 years ago, you know, 10 years earlier in the race.
Yeah, it was funny. At that dinner, they go and say, oh, so we're going to do 100 limited edition tribute cars to the GT2 World Championship. And they were in white with blue stripes, beautiful wing. And I'm very grandly and misguidedly went, I want number 52. I'll take it, you know, thinking I was going to have that Mercedes contract. About 9 months later, I get this fax. Your order's ready if you could send us $68,000. And I'm going, I haven't got fucking $68,000. But I need the car. So I went to Chrysler UK, who I have a contract with, and said, I've got a great idea. You buy the car. You import it. I'll give it to you for a certain number of days, and then it's mine. And they were like, the guy was such a race fan, he said, that's a great deal.
Wow.
And then when I moved to America, I sold it, and it's now back in the States. It's number 52, and I think it's worth some money.
Was that car, as you raced it in race trim, was that a tube frame car?
Tube frame, yes.
So they allowed that in terms of
it was a bit of a hybrid. It was a bit like a like any of the GT3 or 2 cars now, it's a combination of
it had a tub
with the roll cage, but it's, I mean, you're talking 20 years ago now, aren't you?
So yeah, but I wouldn't have thought they would let you go full tube frame.
No, it wasn't like the Trans Am car that you might be driving soon. No.
Right.
Yeah.
Are you going to go to that race?
I'm hoping to. Yeah.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I just told you doing the Trans Am thing. I mean, obviously Tommy Kendall, who's normally, you know, always with me. I was talking to him the other day about that whole Trans Am era for me, even though I only did it for 2 years in the beginning of the 2000s, was the most fun racing I'd ever had.
What did you drive?
I drove the Derhag Corvette. One rookie of the year and all that stuff. And then we took it to Daytona. Shows how fast those cars are. With Simon Greggs, you know, funding it. We went, Derhag built a purpose-built Trans Am car for Daytona, and it was the first year of the Grand Am, and I out-qualified the entire field by a second and a half.
Really?
Imagine we were running 800 and something horsepower. He just, massive brakes. They didn't let us stay in that place. We went backwards.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I got, what do they call it? Not pole position, I got fastest lap.
Did they want to add weight or anything to the car?
Yeah, they added a lot of weight because, you know, they were launching Daytona prototypes. So it was, you know, they didn't need this bright orange car that looked like it was from the 80s.
Right.
You know, stealing the show. But down that banking, can you imagine? 840 horsepower. Yeah. Something.
Wow.
It was the ultimate Trans Am.
I'm trying to think. And so what year were you driving Trans Am?
2002. One and two.
Corvette is not with a mid-engine offering, not in the Trans Am series.
Or no, where are they? I think they're not. Well, the cars are all kind of the same underneath, tube frame and whatnot, and the engine. So they retired that body and they're running the Camaro bodies,
right?
I think, but because the Corvette is now mid-engine, so what they're not going to run it.
But why? I mean, would there be rules? I mean, what would prevent Chevy from saying we're gonna enter a Camaro and we're gonna enter a Corvette, and the Corvette's mid-engine?
I would imagine there's no real commercial benefit to them. I mean, the days of Trans Am, when we all knew and loved it, it was the legitimate place, wasn't it, for a manufacturer to showcase what they did. Now, obviously, now it isn't.
Now that I'm doing it.
And now that you're doing it.
And I think they ended the Corvette body because of that. They're saying, well, you know, running the front end, like running a C7 Corvette body in Trans Am doesn't do anything for us.
Yeah, I know. I would love to see a full Trans Am mid-engine.
Mid-engine, yeah. I think that would be unfair.
Probably, because I don't think there's anything else out there that's mid-engine.
Also, and maybe just expensive, like you're saying, you got to do all this aero, and you got to weight penalties.
You've seen the GT class, or at least you see it now. You see Ferrari, you know, a couple of years ago, 488s, and they're running with the 911s.
Yeah,
and
Audi R8s.
911, running with the front engine, Aston Martins, you know.
It's called balance of performance. They've done a good job. I mean, how can a McLaren run against a Mustang in the Michelin Pilot Challenge? If you saw them in the parking lot, you'd say there's no way, right? And a Porsche. But, you know, IMSA have done a great job of balance of performance. Even though everyone hates it, it either works for you or against you, right? It goes round and round. But they've managed to really equalize the cars. So, as you say, front engine, rear engine, and mid engine, all in the same race. They get there in a different way, but they make the same lap time.
And is everything still rear wheel drive, or was there a minute where they ran all wheel drive, like the Audi R8s? Were they running rear wheel drive?
I think they had to run rear wheel drive.
You know, I'll tell you, one of the coolest, you know, back in the day cars was the Trans Am Audi Quattros. Remember those?
Oh my god!
Things.
Yes. Well, they were running. Yeah, they were running the Quattro, weren't they?
Mid '80s, later '80s, you know, early '80s. Great color scheme, some great drivers, you know, just a weirdo car, probably a straight five with the turbo on it and all-wheel drive. I mean, everyone else is running a Roush Mustang or something, and they're up there with their straight five and their turbo and their all-wheel drive, and it's a beast of car, and they hauled ass.
Yeah.
And there's some of those are around. They pop up in the vintage races.
Were you at Emilia when they had the all those Martini cars? They had like a Martini trailer, I was thinking of obviously they had the Lancia, but they had a whole display of those sort of 80s.
Maybe a bunch of John 80s, Campion's cars as well.
Yeah, 80s rally cars and things, and you look at it and you go, all right. That still gives you a tingle in the right places when you see a Quattro. You go,
You know, there's a Lancia or whatever on Bring a Trailer, Chris. In the weird first, so there's a limited edition Martini Lancia, you know,
Stratos or whatever.
1993, you know, Lancia. I don't know if it's even a two door, four door, whatever. But those weirdo early '90s, late '80s rally cars, but just street version, you know, like the Viper you were talking about. Those things are 250 grand now.
Shoot. Or 211 there on that little Lancia Integrale look.
Yeah, jeez. Like it's a pea shooter, you know, it didn't retail for that much. It wouldn't impress the chicks if you pulled up in it. It's kind of looks like a Golf GTI Volkswagen. Yeah. You know, there's not much to it. I'm sure it's fairly gutless, you know, and the interior would be very 90s or late 80s, you know. But there's a market for those things now.
Yeah.
I mean, I think part of the appeal is that you feel like Walter Roll or one of those guys, Juha Kankkonen or so. You feel that you're going to be going through the middle of the Swiss Alps sideways.
Yeah.
It's a cool little car.
That thing's kind of, that thing looks good.
It's cool. It's a cool little car. But if you would have said to one of us or anybody else several years ago, what do you think this thing sells for? You'd go, it's probably in the 40 to mid 40s. Mid 40s. You know, now it's over 200.
Yeah.
Crazy, right?
It's a cool car, but you got to have a kind of special collection, because you're right. You don't tour your friends through the garage and go, yeah, this little thing costs 200. They didn't even notice it when they walked by.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I wonder what a race car with provenance is worth. You know, driven by one of the legends, that must be
the rally segment has gone up a lot. Mm. Like it's sort of like F1 has gone up a lot. You brought up Nigel Mansell. He's got a couple of F1 cars going across the blocks coming up. I think in the RM auctions, Chris.
Yeah.
I don't think there's an estimate on them yet, but the rally cars and the F1 cars just sort of, there wasn't a market for them a few years ago. More modern F1 cars. Just, they were sort of in the, like drag car, quarter mile cars and NASCARs really haven't caught on in terms of value, vintage value. Indies are starting to kind of catch on a little bit, but they're still lagging behind. But for some reason, the rally segment just popped up.
Well, I think maybe, you know, if you think about it, even with the Formula One cars, there's a break point in the technology that before that, your guys at your garage, if you had a 1990 Ferrari Formula One, you could start it up and you could drive it around Willow Springs and you'd feel pretty cool. You get much long after that, and it takes, if you don't have the module with the right laptop, you can't start anything. And
Right. Yeah, yeah. So
I think it's funny, in the collector's eyes, they become paperweights at that point. You can't drive it. So I wonder what that break point is. I think it's when the analog world kind of totally went from our motorsports. And it's I mean, I've driven old ex Formula One cars and it's a blast. But then you worry about sometimes in the historic scene, you know, it's a gynecologist from Ohio, who's driving Jackie Stewart's six-wheel Tyrrell, and you go, that was a handful then, let alone, with him driving it. So good luck.
Speaking of F1, I was just watching or rewatching the Schumacher doc. I can't figure out what shape. I know he's in bad shape, but I have no reports on any progress or any sense of anything. Does anybody have any of that information?
So he has, like, Jean Todt and certain people are very close to the family, and they obviously have seen him. Occasionally they'll drip out those news releases that he's, you know, a little better or whatever, but a friend of mine who's a surgeon, she said, after, you can't be on those coma meds for 10 years or whatever it is and have a brain left. But I have this vision of him, you know, when his son Mick's running at the Formula One.
Right.
Can you imagine down the end of a corridor in their house in the mountains in Switzerland, there's a corridor and a huge TV and they just have it on so he can listen to it. I mean, sure, that's what happens.
Hear his name up there,
but it's kind of macabre, really.
Yeah. You know,
it's, if it wasn't him, he wouldn't be alive, would he? I don't think. I mean, I don't know any women in my life that would have kept me on for life support.
Oh, that's that.
Would you? I mean, I don't
Are
think.
Are you kidding? I was watching the doc, and they got his wife. She's full of tears, and she's like, we do everything. I would have been, my ex-wife would have pushed me toward the tree.
Yeah, no, your ex-wife and my ex-wife would have that said, "Why did he pull the plug? He was only in for a hernia operation, but it was the end."
Once you get to minute 18, it's just not worth.
That's right.
Why put the family through the grief? Yeah.
But you know what's
awful? But you know what's crazy about that documentary? My girlfriend Melanie, she's into cars, into Porsches in a big way, but she doesn't really know anything about Formula One until Drive to Survive. Certainly nothing about Schumacher. And she watched the documentary without me and said she didn't know till the last 3 minutes that he was still alive. Mm. You know, I mean, because she didn't know he was alive, you know, right. In general. And it was like freaky to her right at the end. They're like, well, you know, hopefully he'll come back. And, you know, she thought it was a posthumous documentary.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right.
You know,
The pod, by the way, or the show Life with Legends podcast and co-hosting with the dad, Derek Bell, where you bring in the racing legends and they talk about famous moments in motorsports. I'm glad all of this is being captured because some of these guys that are a little bit older than us, you know, they're not young anymore.
Mm-mm.
And,
you just spoke to Parnelli?
Capture their story, you know?
Well, that's the whole point. A couple of things. One is, when I left here last time, I asked Matt out, what do you think about me doing a podcast? And his advice was absolutely not. So thanks for that. I ignored you.
Good.
But I did ignore you for the talk show. It was the wrong thing to do. But it all stems from talk about Le Mans. I'm sitting there at Le Mans with Dad and Jackie X Friday night at the Hotel de France. We're talking. They're talking. And I'm just listening going, these are amazing stories about from these two legendary drivers who won four Le Mans together. And oh God, I wish I could capture it. Then I'm sitting with Brian Redman, not when he's doing a big speech, you know, and telling the normal stories. I'm going, God, I should really get this. And then, of course, suddenly, ping, you get an email, so-and-so's died. Wow, you see on Twitter, someone else has died. I'm thinking, I need to get on and do this. So it's a passion project, really, with probably limited commercial benefit. But the one thing I realize is, you know, I'm pretty good at interviewing people. They share things with me, especially as I've done it, you know, so maybe not at their level, but you know, Adam, that kind of intimacy that comes from having you and comedians can have a rapport that you don't with anyone else just because you've both been through the same thing. And I have access. So I'm kind of jumping on it because, as you mentioned, Parnelli, I hate to say it, but I'm sure I was the last media that he will ever talk to, you know, and we didn't video it because you don't want to make your heroes look frail, and he did look frail, but to hear him talk, he's so smart, and just to hear him talk about things. And I've done Redman and obviously Hurley Haywood, and my dad was the first one, and I've got Mario lined up and Emerson. And I mean, I'm obviously doing all those legends, and then Vic Elford, too late for that, sadly. Then when I go to Europe for Le Mans, I'll do Jackie X and Hans Stuck and people. And outside that, I'm doing people like yourself, and just because people connected with speed, people that have a passion for it. I did Patrick Long because he's a young legend. And, so you're right. If I don't capture it, and it's much more of a conversation instead of, you know, in 1952, you know, when you led for seven laps, you know, I don't do that. I just talk.
You know, is someone who I may have gotten one of the last Dan Gurney interviews when we were interviewing him.
Yeah, I think it's the last filmed interview.
Probably the last filmed interview. You have it, and now it's good to be on record. But, you know, when you make a documentary, you grab from all these different sources, you know, like you do one on Carroll Shelby, and it's him from 1982 talking to a guy, and you know, the lighting's for shit and the sound isn't great, and it's that, you know, that bad Betamax shit, but it's there, it is, and we need it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And there's going to be some version of that with all these things that you've done as well, that somebody's going to do a Parnelli Jones, and they're going to want to grab some of that.
Yeah, I mean, I know you guys, you have all your big shows and you do projects as well that just, you know are good things to do. And at worst, I'll have an amazing archive, as you say, of conversations of people that I admire. And it's been fun because, you know, I am doing it in person. I'm traveling to their home because I'm tying it in with my portrait photography, which I love. I use Leica, and I, you know, I'd like to do an exhibition sometime and all that. And it's fun taking portraits of people away from the racetrack. And I'm not a pro, but, you know, again, it's like an extension of the interviews.
And like you said, the history there, you know, so many of these guys that you've known pretty much your whole life, and then be able to sit down with a few that you maybe haven't met before and get that side of the story. It's fun. But I'm sure it's going to be fun.
You know, also, you have access and you're uniquely qualified because of your dad's experience, because of your experience, and because of your ability to conduct an interview and have a conversation with somebody that is cogent and interesting and fascinating to people. Like, there's not many people on the planet who are qualified, because it's not just one element. It's not just I raced or I do a podcast or I broadcast or whatever. There's some familial stuff. Your dad in there, and your dad has relationships, and I mean, your dad's the subject of one of them. Exactly. So, I mean, it's a perfect storm. And I think it's great that you're capturing these guys' voices.
Yeah, I mean, it's thank you so much for saying that. It is. It's funny. We've all been through it when you get interviewed by someone that really has no place interviewing anybody. And I remember asking Chris Economaki. So this is 15 years ago. I was driving him down to the original voice, you know, of motorsports.
Sure.
Here, and he had his voice like this, and I said, Chris, listen, I really want to try and do more TV and interview people and things. What's your advice? And I was driving him and a great friend of his called Edgar Otto to the Homestead race. They'd known each other. They were, as they said, the last two people alive that knew each other as children. And it was great. So I'm driving there and I asked Chris, and he goes, for God's sake, just listen. He said, these people come in with 20 questions, and it's like, you know, what color bike did you ride? Anyway, how was high school? What did you eat for dinner? He said, they just bounce around. He said, just listen. It all comes right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's been really fun. But I wish I was a trust fund kid so I could just travel the world and interview my heroes. Instead, I have to like go, oh, I'm going to the East Coast. Let's try and get four of them in.
People with those experiences have such stories. And when we did the Newman doc, Nate and I went up and talked to Pixar, John Lasseter. And just as an example of a storyteller, we went in, we set up the cameras, and Nate said, all right, so, you know, it's documentary, it's Paul Newman. And he's like, yeah, okay. He talked for 2 hours, and we didn't ask a single question.
Yeah.
And then at one point, Nate's like, I'm so sorry. The battery's dead. I got to replace the battery. Like, that was his big crushing moment.
Yeah,
like,
isn't it funny?
We didn't ask a single question. He just put it all out there, and it was amazing.
Let me just hit a spot here. JB Weld, World's Strongest Bond, the brand DIYers and pros have trusted for over 50 years. Epoxies, super glues, sticks, and you can use it on big and small projects, practically any surface, metal, wood, plastic, glass, ceramics. Keep it in your kitchen. Put it in the kitchen drawer there with the batteries, toolbox, or your supplies out in the garage. Also, the proud owner of Herculiner, the original DIY truck bed liner. If you're looking for the world's strongest truck bed liner, Herculiner has you covered. And it's available at jbweld.com, Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart, AutoZone, Advance Auto Parts, O'Reilly, Amazon, Michaels, and more. And it's proudly made in the U.S. of A. I've been using JB Weld products pretty much my whole fix-it career, and now they make everything. So jbweld.com, made in the U.S. of A. Justin, always good to pay a visit with you.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Yeah, I agree. So where's Tommy? Is he?
Tommy doesn't come in anymore.
Yeah, so he's too big. No, I'll tell you what actually happened.
Is he going down to the TA race?
I'm sure he probably will. Yeah.
Will he be working?
No. So remember we had the talk show. We still have the talk show.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Michelin went in a different direction this year with their sponsorship. Just economics. So we couldn't make it to the IMSA races this year after three amazing seasons. But, you know, as Talk Media, we host Pebble Beach. You know, it's not CBS, it's not Fox, it's not NBC, it's us.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like we'll be working with the guys at Chattanooga. If you've never been to that festival, it's probably the nicest one I've ever been to. I'll get you an invite.
Yeah, Tennessee?
Tennessee. It's just what a great people. Car collections and great people. Just like like you imagine Amelia when Bill started it, right, 25 years ago. We're involved with Your Drain guys again in Newport. So it's kind of on the big business side of things with our live stream. We're doing well. But we're launching a new EV show. Two ex race car drivers that, you know, don't know anything about it. And it's going to go on PBS.
Oh, great.
It's called Electric Talk. And it's, you know, Tommy used to have Test Drive, you know, which was hugely successful. Sure. I used to have Shut Up and Drive. And it's, you know, it's going to be pretty cool. So we're in pre-production on that.
So will we see you up at Laguna Seca in a month?
Yeah, so we will be there, just as ourselves, doing some stuff. And then, of course, we have all the – it's a summer of fun. Everybody's released from their dungeons.
Yeah, no, it's good, ready good to go out and just walk around the track and see some racing. And
can't wait.
And catch up with everybody that we've missed for the past couple years.
You want to see me? I'll be in Indianapolis. Or you can go to Laguna Seca on the week of the 22nd of April. Come say hi. But I'll be at Helium Comedy Club May 6th and 7th. And go to AdamCarolla.com for all the live shows. What do you got, man?
Like we said, the cars that we're driving, you want to see them, follow me at Moderator on social media.
Oh, Life with Legends is on Patreon, by the way.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. I put it. So it's on Patreon because I decided, you know, after your advice, don't try and do a podcast. It's like, I'm going to go behind a paywall, and even if there's 1,000 people, there's got to be 1,000 people. I'm at 36 right now, but counting.
Sweet.
All right. So
Patreon.com/LifeWithLegends.
That's me.
And until next time, it's Adam Carolla for Justin Bell and Matt the Moderator, DeAndrea saying, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Would you love to save some money on your insurance? Of course you would. And who doesn't love a deal? When it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, GEICO can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even your homeowners, condo, or renter's insurance. They are all covered with GEICO. Save even more with special discounts when you bundle coverages together. Plus, they have an easy-to-use GEICO mobile app and 24/7 roadside assistance, so it's easy to switch to GEICO. It's a no-brainer. Switch today and see just how much you could save at GEICO.com. Go there and get a rate quote or contact a local agent.
This February on Pluto TV, we're putting the spotlight on iconic black talent. Watch your favorite movies like Top 5, 48 Hours, and More Than a Game. And drop in to binge black TV classics like The Bernie Mac Show and Moesha. Pluto TV has hundreds of channels and thousands more movies and TV shows all for free. So download the Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device and start watching today. Pluto TV, drop in, watch free.